Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Talking Comics Podcast. It's February 5th, 2020, otherwise known as New Comic Book Day. You're listening to episode number 428. I am your host, Steve Say, and joining me, as always, is Mr. Bob Reier.
As a bit of foreshadowing, hips don't lie.
Joey Brachino is here.
Wow.
I actually watched about 7 minutes of the halftime show earlier today during work. I watched it right up until J-Lo came out and started doing her thing. I had to go back to work. I would have finished watching it. But wow, like the fireworks, the energy, the choreography, all of it.
It was wild.
Very impressive. Very impressive.
After years of being safe, some good shows, but safe in the years following Nipplegate all those years ago.
Oh, right. Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson.
Right. They went very safe with acts that they sort of knew. You had Tom Petty and The Who and Springsteen and Prince even, but they sort of knew where they were going. They went for it. Went for
Prince
something
was
really current. Prince was good,
though. Storm came in, and he was just like, "Let it rain," and they slayed that show. It was amazing.
And look, not all of it was sung live. I get it. We're also getting the
definitely not
or whatever. But just you saying the energy, the spectacle of it.
Yeah.
J-Lo's daughter came out, which was fun.
Yeah, the dancing, the culture infusion in it, and everything, all very cool.
Yeah.
You know. Some people can't handle it, but whatever. So, yeah, Super Bowl 54 had quite the stuff going on. I guess, Bob, you watched it with a couple of friends, right?
Yeah. Most years over the last 10 or so, I was over with Jackie Turner Ormond and her house with Jay and Bobby Shortle and Karen and Little Dez and our friends Aaron and Jeff. And for the first time, we didn't have Super Bowl boxes. You didn't have any betting going. Though I did win $5 on the coin toss from Erin.
That's awesome.
Well, she had just lost on Demi Lovato and the National Anthem. The over-under was 1:55.
Oh, how long it's going to be?
Yes.
People and, still bet on that?
Oh, every year. You could bet in Vegas on it. And that was the betting line.
Wow.
She came in at 1:54.46.
Yeah, so the Kansas City Chiefs took home the trophy, huh?
Yes, they did. The Kansas City Chiefs from Missouri, by the way.
Oh, not from Kansas?
Not from Kansas.
Oh, could have fooled me.
They were losing. They were losing big.
Big comeback.
Yeah. Big comeback. Again, three times in the playoffs. They've been absolutely great, and their quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, is a special player.
Joey, what did you get up to for the Super Bowl this past weekend?
Just went to a friend's house. They had a little housewarming, made some sliders, and watched the game.
No,
love them sliders.
Were you like rooting for anybody? Did you have anything?
No, I don't give a shit about football.
Investment?
Who cares, man? It's football. Were the Giants playing?
No.
Was Rutgers playing? Then I don't care.
I think most of this year Rutgers could have beaten the Giants. I'm just saying.
Rutgers, mm-hmm. Rutgers.
Yeah.
So we, Bronwyn and I, we actually had a real lazy day. We had gotten invited to a party, but we just were not feeling up to it. Lauren had been out here for a couple of days. And I mean, the vast majority of the time we just loafed around and we watched a couple of movies and did not see a yard of the Super Bowl this year, which is odd because I usually do check it out. But now that I'm thinking about it, we actually canceled our cable a couple of weeks ago, so we wouldn't have been able to watch it if we wanted to anyway.
Jackie and Jay don't have cable anymore either. They got it on Hulu or something. It was live on Hulu. Or maybe it was 7 seconds behind or whatever, but it was definitely on there.
Yeah, we watched a bunch of movies. I'll go through the list real quick. Teen Titans Go to the Movies. Awesome, we watched because Lauren had never seen it. Loved it. No, she hadn't gotten around to it. So we sat around like a bunch of little kids and watched Teen Titans Go to the Movies, and it was just as amazing as it was the first time that we saw it. She claims to have seen Ready or Not before we watched it with her, but I still don't believe her. I think that was her first time watching that fantastic movie.
Love that movie.
Yeah. Oh, you watched it?
Oh, I own it. I love it. I bought it sight unseen. I knew I was going to love it.
Ah, okay. Nice. We also watched the new Addams Family, the new animated one that came out last year.
Tell me it's good. I'd love to
Let me tell
that.
You, Bob, I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised by how true to the characters and to the spirit of the Addams Family this entire movie is. It never slacks at any point. It is legit good. I thought it was delightful. I would recommend it. If you're a fan of the Addamses, it is very, very much in line with the old shows and the Sonnenfeld films. And speaking as somebody who just came back from Florida and spent just a few days with his 11-year-old niece, some of the Wednesday Addams stuff that goes on in the movie, all too relatable for me right now. And while some people might see it as being a little out of character, I thought it was hilarious, and I ate it up. It was very good. Very, very good. Yeah, I was nervous. I was real nervous, and was not disappointed when we checked that out. Speaking of not being disappointed, super quick, we also watched Parasite for the first time. Ooh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bob, you should watch Parasite.
Yeah, I've got the reserve in on that one and on Judy, the Renee Zellweger.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
Judy
yeah.
Garland biopic. Yeah.
I heard that was very good as well. Yeah, Parasite is intense. Layers upon layers. Lots of social commentary going on in that movie. And boy, it takes a turn, like about halfway through the movie. It's one of those movies where I thought I had it all figured out. Well, when we sat down to watch it, I'm like, okay, it's going to be about this, and it's going to be intense, and it's going to be well acted, and that'll be that. But no, it goes to some pretty creepy places about halfway through. And what really, really pulls that movie together is the ensemble cast that they used for that film. Their on-screen chemistry with one another was just absolutely spectacular. Immediately believing that these people who are basically infiltrating the home of like a well-off family, mm-hmm. and they're basically inserting themselves into their lives, and just really, really, really powerful stuff. Lots of stuff to chew on. It's one of those movies that you'll be thinking about it for the next couple of days. I'm still thinking about it, and we watched it 4 or 5 days ago, and it's still sitting on my brain. So highly recommend that. And last but not least, we sat down, I think it was yesterday or the day before, and we watched Terminator Dark Fate, the new Terminator movie from Tim Miller that directed Deadpool. And you know, the best Terminator movie since Terminator 2,
the bar's not that high,
I enjoyed this a lot. I saw it too.
I don't know the lead actress's name. Mackenzie She's from Davis. Halt and Catch Fire. What is it?
Mackenzie Davis.
Tully with Charlize Theron, that Juno Diablo Cody wrote Juno.
Mm-hmm. So she was fantastic as a half human, half Terminator. Very, very good chemistry with Linda Hamilton, who was also a lot of fun. I could see some people being put off by some of the ways that Arnold Schwarzenegger's character is kind of comes across in this movie, but I really enjoyed it all around. And I don't know. I guess I'd heard a lot of negative things about it when it came out and kind of expected to only like it, but I walked away from it thinking that it was kind of excellent. So if you want something that's, you know, really in your face and lots of action and lots of like, whoa, kind of moments, you should check out the new Terminator movie. It's pretty good. So anyway, we're just killing a little bit of time here. Obviously, we don't have Sarah this week again, but plans are for now that we're going to record another show. So basically your next week's show, we're going to try to record this Sunday so that Sarah and Bronwyn can join us. We're going to do another Ladies of Valhalla and Talking Comics crossover. And by that time, Birds of Prey will have reached theaters and some of us will have seen it. And so in addition to talking about comics, as we always do, we will do a, you know, a mini review or just a review of Birds of Prey, which I am genuinely very, very excited to go and check out this weekend. I've talked to a number of people that have seen it. They've all come back with really positive things to say about it. Even some people that weren't so hot on the idea to begin with walked away from it saying that they had a lot of fun, knowing that, Chad Stahelski or what, however you pronounce his name, dude from John Wick, fight choreographer, helped with some of the choreography, I believe, for Birds of Prey. I heard one thing above all is that the fight scenes are supposedly bananas, really inventive and really cool, very coolly shot and stuff like that. So,
and to add to that, I'm trusting Gail Simone, who has been tweeting up a storm about the movie and the actresses involved, and they apparently are doing the majority of these fight scenes themselves.
Sure.
Not the really, really dangerous stuff, but they are going for it. And apparently Margot Robbie is Taskmaster in real life. Because the way it's written is it seems as everything they tried to show her to do, she just aced immediately, including sword fighting on roller skates and all sorts of craziness.
Yeah.
And it just sounds more and more fun. And it's going to be violent fun, but that's good too. That's definitely good too.
I'm very excited for it. The only thing... Look, the cast, I'm such a fan of a lot of them. Kathy Yan directing, Chinese-American woman. That's so cool. This it looks like a blast. The only thing putting up just a little bit of hesitation on me is you've just been burned by Warner Brothers before. So, that's the only thing in the back of my head that's like, I'm here for it. I just want you to know.
Yeah.
I got my eye on you. But, I mean, that is partly kind of unfair to the movie. And it's unfortunate that, like I said, we've been burned so many times that, a movie that genuinely looks totally bananas and apropos to what it's trying to be still has that little bit of a kind of response from it. But the Twitter response from the creators and the people that got to see the premiere last week was glowing. So I'm very hyped for it. I'm seeing it on Thursday. So I'm very, very excited.
I feel you on the trailer thing. I remember when Suicide Squad dropped that trailer with Bohemian Rhapsody in it. And that trailer is still, to this day, is so good, especially that moment where all the bullet shells are dropping from the gun and it's all in tune to the music or whatever. And then Birds of Prey comes out and their second trailer uses a cover of Bjork's It's Oh So Quiet. And I was just like, you're doing it to me again, WB. You're taking a song that I love and you're making it look cool. And I'm going to go to your movie and it's going to be on fire. But apparently that's not the case.
Yeah,
it looks colorful. It looks fun and energetic. And it just looks like a bunch of people kind of hamming it up and cutting loose. And that's exactly what I want from a movie like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll check it out this weekend. And then we'll have a review of that for you next show. So make sure that you go and check it out so that you can listen on unimpeded and hang out with us for the duration of next week's show. Okay. So during the Super Bowl, obviously, there's a lot of commercials, there's a lot of trailers, and Disney Plus gave a preview for some of their Marvel content coming out. So they had a kind of like a teaser trailer for The Falcon and the Winter Soldier and WandaVision. And there was like a little tag for Loki at the very tail end.
That's a very
significant tag.
Yes.
What do you mean significant?
Oh my God, there's like Easter eggs in there. Come on, you gotta pay attention. You gotta know your Marvel lore, man.
Right, he's wearing a jumpsuit with the letters TVA. That's Walt Simonson's Time Variance Authority. He's obviously in the time prison. So he's probably been bouncing around all over the place with his Infinity Stone doing all sorts of mischief.
Oh,
I'm going to burn this place down, he says.
Okay. I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
All right. So that's cool. Yeah. Why don't you, Bob, do you want to take us through this little teaser trailer?
We had that. We also have lots of Falcon Winter Soldier. We get to see Zemo.
Mm-hmm.
Sam with the shield. We've got the U.S. agent.
Oh,
who is... In a promoted event, as if it's the Super Bowl, with a marching band all decked out the way he is and dancing girls. Sam training with the shield and all. It looked really, really good. That moment, though, with Zemo and Bucky, that grabbed me right away.
Mm-hmm.
I know you had to love that, Joey.
Oh, I loved every second of the... the WandaVision stuff, I think, was the big takeaway, and we'll talk about
that
in a second.
We'll get to that one. That was
but
really...
the Falcon Winter Soldier stuff, it just opened, and I was like, oh, yeah. Bring me back to that universe. It's been a while. I mean, Endgame... Well, oh, yeah. I always forget about that stupid movie, Far From Home. Far From Home was back in July. You know, and we haven't really had anything since then. And we're going to get Black Widow in May, and then we'll get these series crammed in there between Black Widow and Shang-Chi.
You mean Eternals?
Eternals. Eternals is in November, rather.
Shang-Chi is not till next year, right?
Shang-Chi is in February, yeah. I forgot about the Eternals, too. But it's been a while, and seeing the shield in the tree, like when that's... I didn't know we were getting this trailer. Right, I didn't know we were getting this teaser, rather. So when I saw the shield in the tree, everybody at the party kind of just like stopped. And
yes.
They were like, what's happening?
Same for us.
Yeah. And it happens. You know, Sam grabs the shield, throws it, does the cap thing, looks awesome. The gun in Zemo's face, Bucky with the haircut. It's all great. And then the shot of U.S. agent and the marching band drum major doing the high step and going for the high five. I was like, it's like that movie, the Long Walk from Ang Lee a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So-and-so's Long Walk, the hyper-saturated, you know, Friday Night Lights. And I was like, I always knew Falcon and Winter Soldier was going to be cool, but I just, it reminded me why I want it. Like, I love those characters. I love that universe. I love that aesthetic. It's great. The Tom Hiddleston Loki stuff is just another fantastic little beat. Just comparing it to like the Warner Brothers stuff, or like where they cut these great trailers. Marvel, Disney, the way they cut the trailers too, with those little teases. Like the Black Widow trailers that we've seen, a lot of it's the same footage over and over again. They're not doing anything new. They're not giving away a lot. But then that WandaVision stuff was the most surprising. Not only did they bump it up a couple of months from the initial release date, that happened a couple of weeks ago, but then they showed us this and it was just like, what? People were weirded out and freaked out in the best way in response.
You know what
it
immediately reminded me of? Do you remember that movie Stay Tuned?
No.
Oh,
really?
No, you must have made that up in your head. I don't think it's real.
No, hold on.
What year? What are we talking about here?
I'm looking it up right now. People that are listening to this podcast will know what I'm talking about.
I don't know, man.
Never
heard of it.
Here we go. Okay, 1992. And this starred John Ritter and Pam Dauber and Jeffrey Jones. A husband and wife are sucked into a hellish television set and have to survive a gauntlet of twisted versions of shows that they find themselves in.
Well, that's what this is.
Yeah, and that is fantastic.
It was
that is exactly what I wanted this to be.
Yeah, when they cut to like the 70s Brady Bunch stuff and the Roseanne.
But she's pregnant as Marsha Brady, apparently.
Well, and the cribs and
floating rattle.
I can't wait for the laugh track. I hope there's a laugh track. There's something so like genre meta about those 10 seconds of WandaVision clips. Hello, the Visions. Visions residents. There's so much embedded in those 10 seconds that I was like, oh, I hope that, you know, there's like the theme songs and the pop-up credits at the end and the like punchlines. I think that there's a way to do that that is so genre-based and super fun. And it gives me hope for our She-Hulk office style She-Hulk on Disney Plus. Like, I want that so bad with the quick cuts to the camera and things like that. But I loved it. I thought that the trailer was wonderful. The WandaVision stuff, I think, is the most exciting thing from the teaser.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. And just what you're saying, that they would go that far out. Just, they could have done alternate realities and have it be what we've seen in other things. But to tie in all this old, weird television history, maybe Wanda grew up watching them in Sokovia.
Mm.
You know, the old reruns on Nick at Night or something. Mm-hmm. And they're in her head. But to tie them all in together and so accurately reproduce, that's the Dick Van Dyke living room.
Mm. Yeah. That was going to be my question. What do we think is going on? Do you have any ideas?
Oh, she's tripping. She's trying to bring Vision back, and it just bumps her through all these different realities that are framed around televisions.
Right. She's trying to put her own reality together, perhaps, by bringing him back, and maybe in her own head.
Yeah.
That's how she creates a world.
Which is how the twins are born. Like, she constructs this reality. And I think that WandaVision is playing with that idea.
And do you think we're going to get Wiccan and Hulkling as a result?
1 billion percent. Yes. Yes. And I think we're going to get some Aaron Taylor Johnson Quicksilver coming back as well.
Absolutely. And they are trying to right now cast an America Chavez.
Mm-hmm.
Are they really?
You got that. You got Ms. Marvel. You got Kate Bishop. Like,
we got Young Avengers coming.
I'm telling you that all these Disney shows are going to be barreling towards the Disney crossover. Maybe it's a film. Maybe it's a miniseries, like Invaders, Defender style of the Young Avengers. I think that's going to be what we're building towards. WandaVision will introduce them. Maybe, hey, who knows? Maybe Falcon Winter Soldier will introduce Patriot. Ms. Marvel, Kate Bishop. America Chavez is in development. She-Hulk, who knows? Maybe She-Hulk will be 18 years old. anything works there, right? And the reason why I think that Loki might get worked into there too is one of the Young Avengers' main antagonists is Kang, the Conqueror. Time travel, baby. Indeed. Here we go. It's all there.
If he burns down the TVA, Kang runs free.
Well, yo! Yeah. And Loki's like, I'm going to break everybody out. And then Kang's like, are you now? And then he's
Love it.
Yeah, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. It's going to be a little while for some of this stuff. Oh, and by the way, The Mandalorian is also coming back. They've announced that The Mandalorian Season 2 will be coming in October of this year, whereas Falcon and Winter Soldier will make its debut in August, and WandaVision will be arriving in December.
Yeah.
So there you have it. I think that's a long time to wait for a Marvel show on Disney Plus, but you guys don't seem to agree.
Can I ask you this?
Yeah.
Are you going to keep Disney Plus so that you can watch Falcon and the WandaVision?
Well, we have the yearly subscription anyway. We didn't go month to month.
Exactly. Disney did the thing.
For a service that launched pretty much with one, you know, original show that catered to this fan base with The Mandalorian, now that's over. It just feels like I have no idea what else they have coming along those lines before these shows show up.
What if is coming?
People that logged in November get their 6 months, right, until May when Black Widow drops. And then between Black Widow, you'll get Falcon and the Winter Soldier, What If, right? And then you'll get Eternals. And then after Eternals, you'll get WandaVision. And then after WandaVision, you'll get Shang-Chi. Like, they are spacing this out just enough to get you to keep it, right?
Yeah.
Whereas Netflix is like, here's everything ever. Every week is another thing, right? And to be honest, we talked about this when Mandalorian was dropping. that could get exhausting, right? And Mandalorian, watching that week by week. Are these Marvel shows going to be binging or week by week releases?
No, I think these are going to be weekly.
That is a transformation of the model that Disney is just keeping people subscribed.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Netflix and shows, just to remind everybody that Netflix's Lock and Key goes live on Friday the 7th.
Oh.
So same day that Birds of Prey hits theaters officially, Lock and Key will be on Netflix. So our weekend, I think, is sorted. So, yeah, we'll probably barrel through Lock and Key. And I hear what you're saying, Joey, in terms of the, you know, portioning out the content. I like the weekly model. You know, Bronwyn and I have talked about that a lot, about how it keeps Mandalorian in the conversation and in the social circle for that many more weeks. And it's not something where you binge season 3 of Sabrina and you loved it and you're like really pumped and you talk about it for 2 or 3 days. And then it's just moving on to the next thing and you almost forget that it came out. Like I had to write it down to make sure that, like, a little mini review for myself, be like, just remember that you loved this. When it comes to the end of the year, don't be like, oh, it was so long ago, I really don't remember. Like, you genuinely loved this show, dude.
It's gonna be crazy to think about the comics TV adaptations now with all the Disney Plus Marvel stuff.
Yo, it's gonna be tough. Mm-hmm. Huh. I'll be curious to know when WandaVision's gonna drop to find out if it's even eligible.
It'll be for next year.
Yeah.
I think. Well, so this is more the HBO model. If you remember far enough back, it's now 20 years or so, but Sex and the City and Sopranos were everybody's go-to conversations going back to work on Monday.
Oh, yeah.
Week after week after week, as those shows played out, and they both of them won tons of awards, and that led to Boardwalk Empire and all the other things that A&E and everyone else did, but it was always weekly.
I love that I've seen all of Sex and the City and the first movie.
Don't see
and
the
I've seen,
movie.
I think, maybe 4 episodes of the first season of The Sopranos.
Huh.
I don't know.
Great TV.
I had an old girlfriend that had the box sets in her room when she was off at class. I would watch Sopranos, and it was okay. Not my thing. Anyway. Hey. It was cool that it was happening in our backyard. That aspect of it was fun.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I still have to watch The Wire, too. But anyway, it's a conversation for another time. Now we should probably talk about some comics. All right, Bob, would you like to go first?
Sure.
Okay. I am going to put 5 minutes on the clock for you and go.
Well, it's kind of all about endings this time around. There's Captain America number 18 by Ta-Nehisi Coates, Jason Masters, Matt Miller, and Corey Pettit. And it's actually the penultimate chapter in the arc, but does conclude a really major thread in this long-running tale. As with Ta-Nehisi Coates' Black Panther run, he favors his novelistic roots with a slow-burn approach, which can sometimes be frustrating, but when the payoff comes, amazing, as it was here. There's a scene here where the still trying to make amends for Hydra Cap Steve Rogers addresses a riding crowd, and it's beautifully done, so bear with me. I know how hard it's been, like the world's been turned upside down, not knowing who to trust, not even Captain America, not even the Shield. So you look around at this world and you wonder, is there anyone I can trust? Especially in these times with everything going on in Washington, everything with Shield. But I am telling you, without that trust, we don't have a country. Without a country, we don't have each other. Wow.
Hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Coates. It's been great all the way through his run. Again, a little slow here and there, but the story he's telling and the usage of Cap as a symbol, spot on. To something lighter, we have Betty Page Unbound number 10 by David Avalon, Julius Oda, Ellie Wright, and Taylor Esposito. This is the finale of Invasion of the Betty Snatchers and the series as a whole. Spoiler alert! The redoubtable Miss Page takes down a swarm of alien bees and their monstrous queen all by her lonesome. And who wouldn't believe that? Because, right, it's Betty Page. I mean, come on. Here's the thing. Based on the previous issues, you know, this has been just an entertainingly clever book from the get-go. And what with Betty and all her very meta 1950s stylings, just I'm hoping that the blurb that finishes this issue that says Betty will return isn't just a wink to the credits in the old James Bond movies and that David Avalon will be back with some more tales. I'm going to skip ahead a bit because we had a little bit of changes, but a book that elicited a lot of emotions when I read it, and I picked up again this week because of what we're going to be talking about as our open discussion, is Fantastic Four: The End from 2006/7. It was six issues back then. It's by Alan Davis, inks by Mark Former, colors by John Calise, letters by Dave Lamphere. Now, a battle with Dr. Doom had unimaginable costs and drives the Richards clan apart. Across the six-issue miniseries, Mr. Davis brought us all the grief, anger, denial, and heartbreak that a family tragedy can engender, yet all within the framework of a classic FF adventure that allows the reader space to hope. Fabulous usage of Marvel history, a multitude of marvelous guest stars, and one, well, two emotionally satisfying endings. I count Fantastic Four: The End as one of the best FF stories in their epic history. And since this long-out-of-print hardcover is about to be reprinted in trade, you can find out for yourself.
Ooh.
That's it for me.
Very. One of the best of all time.
Yep.
I always like the end books. If I recall, though, that one was kind of depressing.
It starts out very, very depressing.
Yeah, it's pretty dark. The X-Men one also gets pretty heavy around the middle as people just start biting it, which I guess with Fantastic Four is a little different. Like, X-Men, you got like 80 characters, and Chris Claremont was just like dead, 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 dead. So, yeah,
here's a spoiler.
One.
It happens on the third page. In this battle with Dr. Doom, it's after a giant mutant war has broken out. Doom has recrafted himself. He's as much robot as human at this point. In a battle with the Fantastic Four, he's grabbing Valeria, and in the attempt to do what he needs to do, ends up Franklin Valeria die.
Mm. What?
On like the third page.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
I remember that, and I was like, I don't know if I can do this.
And as the rest of the story goes on, Jennifer trying to tell Reed, you know, it's not your fault. It was Dr. Doom who did that. And but when's the last time you spoke to your family? Ben and Alicia and their three kids are living on Mars with the Inhumans. Johnny's one of the Avengers. We see Sue. She's now an archaeologist. She hooks up. She meets Prince Namor. Have to watch what I say in this.
Works alongside of,
exactly. But as the book goes on, not only do we get to hope as the readers, these characters are hoping to put this family back together.
Mm.
And it leads to some really lovely stuff that make you wish Alan Davis had done more Fantastic Four issues over the course of his time.
He did writing and art for that?
Yes.
Nice. I do want to.
Excalibur is sensational.
Yeah, I do want to catch up with Captain America too. I think I'm on issue like 13 or 14.
Okay, so
I've loved
about
yeah,
this, yeah.
I've loved Coates' run. I also want to catch up with his Black Panther. I kind of fell off when he relaunched it with the Intergalactic Empire stuff. But yeah, Ta-Nehisi Coates has had a really great few years, kind of integrating into the comics world, but still holding on to some of his core ideals as a writer from his nonfiction and fiction days.
And you said that 18 was the final issue, Bob?
There's one more to go to finish off the storyline, but this part of it, it's been branching as we've gone along.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This sort of clips off one of those branches. I don't want to say too much.
Cool. I'll have to grab that now that it's going to be collected, at least the first couple of trades. I've been wanting to read that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Very cool. All right, Joey, would you like to do a lightning round?
Yes, I would.
Ka-chow. All right, 5 minutes. Go.
All right, a quick lightning round this time. Still trucking along with the X-Men stuff. This was X-Men number 5 through 7, a little bit delayed here. I think this is going to be one of our first kind of multi-issue storylines here. After kind of 4 single issue chapters. John Hickman and Arvi Silva with Martha Gracia here. The Children of the Vault insanity continues as Cyclops and Professor X send a squad of specifically selected mutants. Darwin, who we know from our Deadly Genesis days. A return to the Land of the Living Sink, a fan favorite from back in the 90s, especially from Generation X. And X-23, who's like, girl, I'm Wolverine now.
Yeah.
Wolverine, which I love that beat. I loved it. Because they have this ability to adapt.
Damn right, and girl.
The nature of the vault and this infiltration that they need to do, time is very odd in there. So they send Darwin, Sink, and X-23 thinking that their mutant powers will allow them to survive in the vault as they try and find these bad guys that Mike Carey introduced all these years ago. Things obviously go awry.
It's the X-Men.
It's the X-Men, and we'll see what happens in issue 6. Like I said, this is kind of the first time X-Men 1, 2, 3, and 4 were kind of a lot of world building. Each issue was a little corner, and you had a nice self-contained story. But now that we're into 4, 5, 6, 7, there seems to be an ongoing thread. And it's cool. It's really great. It's really great to be reading X-Men again. X-Men itself is really high concept.
Yes, it is.
In a way that, not going to lie, I needed to read X-Men number 5 twice. And I know these characters, and I get it. So this was wild. And if you don't like X-Men, maybe you like X-Force, or maybe you like Fallen Angels, or maybe you like Excalibur, maybe you like Marauders. It's nice to have books now that, even though they are connected, I know we talked about this last time, where if you miss something, you kind of miss something.
Yeah, they're super connected.
Yeah, genre style and kind of your entertainment value, you'll find something in these new series that I think you'll connect with. But I liked it. Really great issue. I'm looking forward to the next one. I do miss my Tom Taylor Wolverine, Gabby, and the
Jonathan the Wolverine.
Yep. Yeah. I've missed that. I missed that version iteration of Laura, but this had a little bit of that sass, so it was cool to see. Also Criminal number 12, Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips with Jacob Phillips on colors. This is Cruel Summer part 8. Kiss Tomorrow Goodbye, as we get a tragic ending to the saga of Teague, Lawless, and Jane, which then gets even more tragic as the threads get tied up and we get a clearer picture of how this arc of Criminal ties into the previous series. And as of right now, that's all she wrote for Criminal for a little while.
What?
Yeah, so this ends this story arc, and they're going to kind of sit back on it for a little bit as they have their new graphic novel coming out this May. Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. Sarah sent me the link to it. Pulp is what it's called. It's a mix of the Wild West and New York 30s pulp. The quote is, "The tale of an outlaw and the man who writes his story." So get hyped for that. Criminal, last 12 issues, and My Heroes Have Always Been Junkies have just been so incredible. You know, between this and Killer Be Killed and Fatale and Velvet, was it just called Velvet?
Just Velvet, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then going back to the Criminal stuff, I've said it time and time again, but if Brubaker and Phillips and the fade out, if Brubaker and Phillips are doing something, I'm reading it, because the way they tell a story is just so attuned to each other and to the medium of comics, in the same way that Gillen and McKelvey are as well. It's great to see this team continue to evolve and develop kind of new and exciting stories. So if you fell behind on Criminal, catch up. The last couple of issues are just stunning. And Invisible Kingdom number 9, I've been catching up with Invisible Kingdom over the last week since we did the award show. G. Willow Wilson and Christian Ward. This is part 4 of the second story arc. We got one more issue to go here. Things get wild as the crew's plan to get their ship back from Space Marauder Turo gets twisty-turny, and there is a shocking cliffhanger here that they're saying what the plan was, and I was like, no, there's no way. And then I get to the last page, and you're just like, damn. First of all, Christian Ward, brilliant, right? It takes some getting used to, but once you're in that aesthetic, it's like, wow. I banged out like 3 or 4 issues just like 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. And G. Willow Wilson's just, her storytelling is so, it's so clear.
Smart.
It's smart, yes. It's so smart. But it's so clear in its kind of, it's clear and simple in its emotional sensitivity. Like, you so immediately grasp the connections between these characters. The way she crafts it, she doesn't need any of that baggage. It's just boom, right there. You get it. You get why they like each other. It's in a few words or a single narrative caption, you're like, I understand. And that efficiency of storytelling, it's really great to read. And it blows my mind that there's only been 9 issues of this. I feel like I've been with these characters for so long because that efficiency of storytelling is so, so good. I loved it. I'm looking forward to number 10. But yeah, if you fell behind on Invisible Kingdom or Criminal, do catch up since the award shows because they've been really awesome since.
Yeah, I think I'm like 2 issues behind on both. I'll have to catch up on those for sure. All right, man.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm jumping in here a second. I don't want you to spoil the end of Criminal because I'm behind, because I'll catch up because we're going to have to vote on it next year, I'm sure. what's really great with Brubaker and Phillips here is in everything they've done, they present you with characters that you shouldn't probably be rooting for or feel anything for. Teague is a really nasty piece of work.
Oh, man.
And his kid's even worse.
Oh, man.
And yet you want him to succeed somehow. That's brilliant.
There is a classic Brubaker splash page. This is going back to like his Daredevil days, but this is like, and Cap days. There is a classic Brubaker splash page in this issue of Teague. And you're reading the captions and you're like, this guy is awful. And yet here I am, right? It's a painful book. It's a painful finale that takes some really, really tragic and shocking turns.
Okay.
Take my breath away.
X-Men, man. Is it my imagination? Maybe it's just because it's been delayed and it's been a while since we've read an X-Men proper book, but did this whole vault thing come out of nowhere for you? Not nowhere, but like all of a sudden we're here and we're doing this.
I needed to be reminded of the vault storyline, which did happen either last issue or a couple of issues ago, right? When Storm goes and they investigate the thing and they go in and it's like, oh, there's like 500 mutants here. Oh, wait, one of them's not immune. Who is that? And it ends up being this child of the vault and she like runs away and they can't find her. It happened in like issue 3 or 4. And when I read X-Men 5, I was like, did the vault thing happen in another series? I couldn't remember. And then I remembered. I was like, oh yeah, okay, yeah. Because I remember on the podcast talking about Mike Carey's Children of the Vault storyline from when he was doing X-Men way back when, from like issue like 196 or something like that. So like once that clicked in my head, I was like, oh, I see. Oh, we're having an ongoing story. Oh, okay, we're not just hanging up in the summer's corner of the moon having a barbecue anymore in these one shots. Like we've moved on from that, or like Apocalypse and Xavier and Magneto going to a secret ambassador's diplomat meeting. Like
right.
Hickman is finally settling into a multi-chapter story arc here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some wild stuff going on in this. Like even the vault itself has got this like depowered or dead toddler sentinel sitting on top of a throne guarding this thing, which was pretty intimidating. It's like, okay. And then even the inside of the vault is pretty remarkable with all the circuitry and stuff going on and all the code explaining like what's happening inside of the vault. And yeah, man, when you're talking about high concept, I mean, I know that X-Men have done some really wild things in the past, most of which I probably have never read, but this is just so above and beyond anything that I've read X related ever in terms of its ludicrousness is like the only word that I can think of. It's so high concept and nut bar. I'm really enjoying it a lot. Good stuff. Alrighty. Should I do a lightning round now?
Yeah.
We're going to power through this. So, funny story. We're asking for questions on Twitter and whatnot. And we got a request that's from Dominic Lindsay. And he says, I know there was a lot of love for Chip Zdarsky on the show last year, but did any of you try his Daredevil run at all? If not, would one of you like to volunteer? Happy to share digital codes to help with the costs of one lucky podcaster. I'd love to hear your take on it. So funny enough, I was in the midst of reading Daredevil when we got this tweet. I was at issue 8 of the 10 that I read. And so ask and ye shall receive, I suppose. So I'm going to start a clock for myself.
Nah, don't bother.
All right. So Daredevil, Volume 1, No Fear. That's K-N-O-W, Fear. Written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Marco Cicchetto, colors by Sonny Go, and letters by Clayton Cowles. Daredevil is wanted for murder, and Detective Cole North is on the case. In this Daredevil, from what I can gather from this run, is that I missed a lot of stuff between, I guess it was, help me out here, the run Sam.
Wade Samney?
There you go. Thank you.
Okay.
Mark Wade and Chris Samney's run. That was the last of the Daredevil stuff, proper Daredevil stuff that I'd read. So I believe it was Charles Soule who took the character over.
Yes, he did.
Okay. I've not read most of that. I think I read the first couple of issues and then I kind of fell away from it. I might go back and read it because apparently I missed a lot, including Matt getting hit by a truck at one point.
Again, did his eyesight come back?
No. No. Okay. If anything, it's damaged him to a point where it's really affecting his performance as a hero and as somebody who is able to kind of keep his thoughts together and know what his reality is. And so we're introduced to a very emotional Matt Murdock, very confused, and like I said, experiencing gaps in his memory. And so what basically happened, spoilers for, there's now 16 issues of this, so I'm going to be talking some spoilers for issues, Daredevil's issues 1 through 10, so just brace yourself if you have yet to read this stuff. Daredevil is, like I said, wanted for murder, and he's convinced that either Fisk or Owlsley are to blame for his current situation. He just can't quite figure out how. Meanwhile, Matt is struggling to recover from whatever he's been doing before the Zdarsky stuff took hold. And he's pushing himself way too far. He's getting very sloppy and it's affecting his work as a hero. It's affecting his work as he's now a corrections officer as opposed to a lawyer.
Wow.
And or apparently he was the mayor of New York City for a very brief period of time. That I've gathered from this.
He's been
busy. Yeah, he's been real busy. So basically his friends, like members of the Defenders mostly, are coming to him and they're like, Matt, you gotta hang it up, man. There comes a time when people might need to accept that they're done in this line of business and you've just had one thing after another happen to you that we love you, but we don't think that you're the same Daredevil that you've been. And if you keep going, you're going to get hurt or you're going to hurt other people. And so Matt really takes this to heart and it takes a conversation with one of his fellow heroes to really kind of make him see the light. And by the end of the fifth issue and end of volume one, Matt actually surrenders the Daredevil costume and says, I'm going to hang it up and I'm done. And so Daredevil Volume 2 picks up 8 weeks later after he's surrendered the costume. And it's just, it's really, really wild. Like it's deal. The book itself is dealing a lot with Matt's faith, and it always has, but he's got these really, really in-depth conversations about faith and about religion and about, you know, duty to one's self and whether or not he should be using these gifts the way that he's using them. Are, you know, are they God-given gifts, or is this something that he commands himself, that sort of thing, and therefore is responsible also for the consequences of those things. And it's just crazy. Really, really emotional stuff. Really enjoyed that aspect of the book. Fisk is now the mayor of New York City, and his grip on the city has grown tighter and more organized. The crime families are kind of cool with the way that things are running, with the exception of Owsley, because he's never happy about anything. But it just puts the city, Hell's Kitchen itself, in this really unique position to see how it functions without a Daredevil, you know, lurking in the shadows and scaring people from doing what they're doing. Fisk's plan is basically, we can have crime in the city, but it needs to be organized crime. And by organized, I mean, we all need to, what's that?
Me. He's in charge.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, like, he's like, we all need to, he actually, I don't want to spoil too much, but he wants communication to be open within the groups. Everybody needs to tell each other what they're doing so that they can kind of stage the crime that goes on in the city to make crime kind of its own little ecosystem that fuels New York as a place to live and stuff like that. And it's some really interesting stuff. Matt, at one point in the second volume, finds himself sharing a meal with one of the bigger crime families in the story. And some of the conversations that they have about like classism and gentrification of Hell's Kitchen and stuff. And I mean, it goes on for pages. It's like a good 8-9 pages worth of a sit down dinner. And Zdarsky just really, really, really writes some compelling arguments from both sides. And I was just as interested in this, you know, intense dinner scene as much as I was from, there's an incredible car chase in issue number 5. If you go back and you read this run, look forward to issue number 5, because the only other comic that I've seen that has this good of car chases and whatnot is Crowded. Like, this is some Crowded level car chases. Wow. Marco Cicchetto and Sonny Go for that particular arc, just phenomenal. And I should mention, I really liked the artwork for the first volume. It took a little bit for me to get used to the art in the second. Something about the eyes and some of the scrunched up faces. But other than that, I did settle into it after a time, and it was pleasant. It was nice. But the art in Daredevil, both arcs, really, really suit the character. They really do go above and beyond to bring the emotions of Matt and his struggle out onto the page. And some of those action sequences, they just jump right off the page. Really, really amazing stuff. And yeah, the only reason why I was still awake, I would have kept on reading, is I'm waiting for them to drop the third trade, which unfortunately doesn't happen until April. So I might cave and buy the issues at full price. But yeah, I really, really did enjoy this run. This was kind of the one gap that I had of Zdarsky's stuff from last year that I wasn't reading. Being really, really impressed with his line of work ever since he's decided to try his hand at writing. And yeah, I mean, it's there. I wish that this was the TV show. Like, Daredevil season 3, like, it wasn't bad, but this
wasn't this.
Yeah, this is, in my opinion, this is better. There's all kinds of crazy stuff with Punisher going on in this, and I like memory stuff, particularly when it comes to superheroes. the idea that Matt isn't able to trust himself ever since one of his, you know, myriad of accidents that he's had in the last couple of runs, but he's been beaten down so many times. And I mean, even in War of the Realms, he was, you know, Daredevil, God of whatever for that. So that had to have been a trip. And I like that this arc is dealing with the ramifications of that stuff. And we're not just doing a hard reset because we don't want to continue the story that other people were telling. And we're going to deal with the fallout of these events and see where Matt Murdock is at after having been through hell and back. And I think Zdarsky and his team are doing a really, really good job. And I'm looking forward to reading more of it for sure. I know you read it too, Joey. Do you want me to talk about Thor first and then we'll double back?
Yeah, that's fine. I was only able to read the first two or three issues. I loved it. I love the Daredevil character. Sorry. Yeah, no, I wasn't able to do all 12 or 13 issues, but Marco Cecchetto, first of all, is one of my favorite artists. He did Punisher Warzone a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Love it. Love that work. I love Daredevil. Love Matt Murdock. And the story's great. It's perfect for the character, and it's crazy again to see Zdarsky doing that and Invaders and some of that wackier, crazier stuff that he's doing and Spider-Man. It's really awesome.
I'm just blown away by his stuff. I mean, for so many years, he was just the sex criminals guy, right? Like he was the other half of Zany Matt Fraction. It was, you know, Matt and Chip showing up to the cons, doing weird, wacky stuff all the time. And, you know, can't have a regular conversation with them because you're too busy laughing and stuff like that. And then he turns around and he writes stuff like Invaders and Daredevil and Spider-Man Life Story and just gives these, you know, Silver Age flavor to these characters. But still does new things with them. And I just think he has an incredible writing voice. He's got a very good handle on the characters that he works with. And he's steadily becoming one of my favorite people. He has been for a while, I guess. But, you know, it's nice to know that he's not just illustrations after all this time. Yeah. All right. So, I mean, I talked about Thor, King Thor last week and Thor number one. I did read Thor number two that came out this past week, written by Donnie Cates, art by Nick Klein, colors by Matt Wilson, and letters and design by Joe Sabino. I don't really have any notes, I guess. So I'm calling it the Nothing because that's exactly, it's the Star Plague or whatever the next big bad is. So the Nothing from the Neverending Story is coming and only Galactus can stop it. Galactus must eat 5 special planets to have enough power to stand against the Nothing. And so we're introduced to Thor, the Herald of Thunder, by the end of issue 1. And so we're continuing this story. And this is, for me, what I found this to be was more of an examination of the chemistry between Thor and Galactus and their roles in trying to save quite literally everything that ever was. And they're going to have to figure out how to work together. And, you know, Thor is still very much dealing with having recently become king, the Allfather. And so he's just a torrent of emotions while having to travel the universe with Galactus, a planet-eating giant who does exactly that in this issue. And basically what we have is them coming upon their first planet and Thor kind of buzzing down to check it out and being like, yo, man, like there's still a lot of people here and we need to ferry them to safety before you chow down because I'm not going to have that. Like, we're not going to lose people. And Galactus just doesn't think that there's any time. And he starts, you know, manipulating Thor to kind of get his way. And you really see the larger than life villainy of this character and just how cruel he can be when he wants something and he hates Thor. Like, that's the other part. Like, he might have given Thor the powers cosmic to be his herald and whatnot, but he is not happy about it. And he loves to remind Thor that he can, he gave it to him and he can also take it away. So that kind of adds to their chemistry there and whatnot. And I'm digging it. Like, I'm really digging it. Like I said, you know, anytime that we come off of a really big run, let alone one of my favorite runs of all time, without a doubt, at least one of my favorite Marvel runs of all time with Aaron's Thor for the last 7 years, I was real nervous about this. And so far, I'm having a good time. I'm constantly surprised by what I'm reading. There are some cool characters that are entering the fray, and it's metal and it's moving, and I'm good to go. So I'm on board.
Two things. First, all you had to do was call Squirrel Girl and she could have sorted out Galactus for him.
I know, right?
And that would have been it. But I understand. I saw some pages of this in the store, and isn't the Justice League in this issue?
The Justice League? Well, yeah. Oh, in the it's, very beginning.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I liked it a lot.
It's a good
yeah,
look.
Go ahead, Joey. You wanna try to tackle that part of it? I thought that was a little odd.
No, I thought it was quippy and nice little in joke there. You know, there's this universe where the fast are fast and the dark are brooding and the super are men.
God of the
right?
dark and the god of the ocean.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
yeah, there's an emerald streak or something like that.
And they're all rushing towards that star plague, and it destroys them. And all the headlines afterwards were like, Marvel kills the DC universe. And I'm like, oh, come on. Remember we used to have those nice little distinguished competition things, little bits and little jokes here and there. I thought it was fun.
There really was. Jeff Johns used them in Doomsday Clock.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100% at the end of Doomsday Clock. Yeah. With the alternate universes. He didn't, like, eviscerate them by a
giant space
plague. No,
that's true. That's
true. I agree with you, Steve. I think coming off of Aaron is tough, but this has been... It was hard because when J. Michael Straczynski did his Asgard on Earth in Oklahoma stuff, which was only like 12 or 16 issues. It actually wasn't a particularly long run, but it was a definitive one for a while. And then they gave it to, I want to say Fraction after that. Fraction went high sci-fi with it. It's hard with Donnie Cates coming after Aaron because Aaron, over the course of 5 years, really did a lot of different things with Thor. So to try and approach it from a different perspective or a different genre or a different kind of storytelling mode is tough. And yet, this does feel different to me, and different in a good way. I'm enjoying the interactions with Galactus, the kind of reluctant Herald, and the art is fantastic, and I'm along for the ride. I'm into it. I really, really am.
Thor does some damage to Thor, Galactus as well.
He takes off some fingers. I was like, damn.
Oh.
He throws Mjolnir at him, basically just to teach him a lesson real quick. And surprisingly, Galactus does not bode well against Mjolnir.
Galactus is like, no, don't throw the hammer, and it just like takes his entire finger off.
Well, he is depowered a little bit. You're saying he has to eat 5 special planets to be ready, so maybe he's just a little peckish.
Yeah, because Thor won't let him eat.
Yeah.
Once he does, though,
who knows?
Look out!
Yeah.
Yeah, he's terrifying. Mm-hmm. He's genuinely terrifying in this, and I think he's supposed to be. Like, I haven't read too much Galactus stuff where I've been genuinely afraid of him, and I'm actually a little afraid of him in this.
Did it go all the way back, though? Stan postulated it through the Watcher. He let the Watcher have the say here as they stood on top of the Baxter Building, that Galactus is beyond good and evil. He just is.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the shark in Jaws. He has to do what he does, and it comes off as cold, calculating, immoral, but it's more, I guess, amoral. Just has to do what he needs to survive, like any other creature. And he's part of the balance of the universe, which doesn't make it any less terrifying when he eats your planet.
It's funny. They stress that in in this issue as well. Yeah, it's good. It's good. I'm comfortable. I'm looking forward to the next issue, and I'm pleasantly surprised. Okay, I think that's all I've got. I was going to talk about Hawkeye Freefall number 2. I don't know what really.
Shocking.
You think so? You think so?
Are
you surprised?
I was surprised at the end of issue 2. They were like pulling the rug. I was like expecting maybe another issue or two, but like Rosenberg was like, screw it, twist right now. Issue 2, get ready. I like it. I like it a lot. I love all the characters. Love Hawkeye. Love Hawkeye banter with Luke Cage. And Tony Stark.
Come down here for a minute. It's very emasculating.
Yeah, it's so funny. And I love the Hood. The Hood is one of my favorite ridiculous villains. And everybody writes him exactly the same. Like, this guy thinks he's the hottest shit around, but he's actually just some dude bro in a tablecloth who knows some magic tricks and has two magic guns. And I love that. And it makes him just the perfect bad guy for Hawkeye here. And the last pages, I genuinely like mouth agape. I had no idea.
What?
Yeah, seriously. Cause
I was trying to put the timeline together and I was like, what?
Yeah. It's, I'm interested. I'm very interested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really, really digging it a lot. Otto Schmidt on art.
So good.
Absolutely fantastic. Really, really fits the mood of the character and great, great action sequences. There's one point in that issue where they fall on top of a car and like, there's very little that I love more in comics when somebody falls onto a car and you see all those shards of glass. And think it's like when somebody draws a cityscape and you see all the windows that they had to put in, but you think of all these little bits of glass flying everywhere and there's like stuff reflecting off of them. And they took the time to think about all this and calculate it. And it's just so brilliant. People are so stupid talented. I hate you all. I'm just kidding. I love what you do. I eat it up every week. And then we podcast about it. Yeah, good stuff. You know, there's some fun stuff going on this year. January took a little bit to warm up, but now that, you know, we're into February and some stuff is going to be dropping later this month. And then once March hits, there's a bunch of things coming out. And yeah, bold new future for comic books. This is the first time, I think, in a long time that we've been doing the show where the new year kind of feels like a hard reset for a lot of things. I think the X-Men reboot stuff is really helping to kind of put me in a different position looking at comics this year. And there's so much more like representation in the field happening right now. People are making some really big moves. People that were on indie titles for years are now getting major characters on major labels. And there's some fresh voices coming in. It's a good time. It's a good time. Okay, Bob, would you care to talk to us about Captain Marvel, The End?
Oh, I certainly will. Captain Marvel, The End is by Kelly Thompson, Carmen Carnero, David Curiel on colors, Travis Lanham on letters. Ms. Thompson and Ms. Carnero were the team, of course, on the relaunch Captain Marvel we saw last year. This is, as I spoke about Fantastic Four, The End, the conceit is it's the last story. It's the ending for this character. And this was a prime example of how to use these themes and this conceit in a just powerful way. It's deeply emotional, wistful even. As Carol returns to an Earth of 2051 that's been ravaged by another superhero conflict that's gone off the rails completely. No spoilers. Hopefully, you know, there's some surprises here, but except to say that Ms. Thompson, Ms. Carnero's work here showcases all that made their Captain Marvel run a worthy follow-up to what Kelly Sue DeConnick had done, with an ending that harkens back into some Marvel history. It's Operation Galactic Storm era Quasar stuff, but to me, most specifically to Kelly Sue's first Captain Marvel 14, whose ending, as I even looked at it just the other day again, continues to destroy me when I watch it. And yes, you'll tear up at this ending, but you'll smile too. It's just a wonderful moment. It's just really, really well done. And if you love Carol and Captain Marvel and some of her other assorted friends and neighbors, you'll get a big charge out of this one, I think. How about you guys? How'd you feel about Captain Marvel, the end?
Well, speaking of big charge out of things, what is going on with Carol throughout this issue? She's got a, this, like, I don't know, luminescent, almost, what is that character?
She's gone binary, man.
Binary again. Yeah, back.
Yeah, but she's gone binary in a way that she's like bluish white fire.
She's energy.
Joey, I know what she is. I'm just asking if we know how it happened, or if this is just something. This is just the way she is at this point.
The way she is. Actually, funny story. I mentioned it before. In X-Men: The End by Chris Claremont, she is a complete being, energy being,
wow,
who I believe was like inside the Starjammer's ship or some Shi'ar ship. It was something weird like that. She had gone like full binary and now was an entirely energy being. So there is precedent for this. But what's really fun about these new The End books, fun, and I kind of wish, I'm of two minds about it, is that they're one-shots, right? You get one story, the end, 23 pages, 22 pages, whatever, in and out, the end, whatever. I think it works here. I think you get a nice self-contained moving story that gets at the heart of the Captain Marvel character. But like Fantastic Four was 6 issues. X-Men The End was 3 volumes, 6 yes. issues each, long.
Like, it's
of
Chris
the
Claremont.
End.
Well, so, yes.
Yes, he had to write, you know, his script was 3,000 pages long. So I wonder if we got Captain Marvel The End 5-issue miniseries, you know, what the difference would have been. And I'm of two minds about it. I love the one-shot model, especially with these kind of what-if stories. But I also love the character, and I kind of wish that I, you know, especially with Thompson and Carnero on it, like, I want more of this. I want more of the rebellion, not the rebellion, but I want more of that kind of like surviving squad and all. Yeah, and I want more of the children, right? That are introduced here. It's a really cool world that Thompson builds, and who knows? Maybe we'll get more of it in the Captain Marvel series proper. There's no reason why she can't revisit it. I find it very interesting that they had the creative team from the ongoing series come on to the end issue. Because Captain America this week, Captain America The End, is like Eric Larson is doing art and writing on it. And I'm like, I wonder what Ta-Nehisi Coates' Captain America The End would have been.
Hmm.
Amen to that. Yes.
Yeah, this definitely made me want to read some of the other ones. I'd be curious to read the Miles Morales The End that came out. I guess it was this past week or the week before. I want to check that out. But yeah,
the Deadpool one is fascinating too.
Oh, you read it?
No, I'm going to buy it this week, as a matter of fact.
Did Kelly Thompson write that one too?
No. No, okay. I forget who did it, but it's supposed to be a complete romp.
Okay. I could be down with that.
Yeah.
I might pick that up later tonight. Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything that you both said about this issue. Very touching. And what a daunting task. Like, I know that it stands on its own. You can kind of set it up any way you want it. But I can't even begin to imagine what the brainstorming session would have to be to write the end of a legacy character, even if it's just for one issue. You know, and deciding to, I guess, present her in a different way. Like I'd mentioned before, that Carol looks different when she's powered up, when she goes binary. Just which characters to include, who survived, who died, you know, what are the state of things? What kind of new creatures can you introduce that would be around in this time? What does the world look like as everything's coming to an end? And yeah, I think of the job of some of these creators, and particularly creators that are dealing with legacy characters and these giant teams and these big casts and stuff like that. And the amount of research and thought that has to go into, if I were a comic book creator, like I would never have a moment's peace. Like I would never know how to walk away from the story. I would always be plotting for these characters. And I think that Captain Marvel, the end, is a really great example of creators, but really just Kelly Thompson killing it on this character. She has such a wonderful hold on Carol Danvers. And I mean, her run has been magic. We keep saying it, best since Kelly Sue DeConnick's run. And every opportunity that she gets to prove that she can do honor to this character, she does it in spades. And yeah, I loved this. I thought it was great.
And we managed not to spoil it. I'm very happy.
Yeah, people, just make compliment city.
Read this book and keep your Kleenex handy.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. What do we got going on? Really quick, because I've been forgetting to do this, and I apologize, but I'll just read the list of books really quick, and then we'll get to a listener question. So Bob talked about Captain America 18, Betty Page Unbound number 10, and Fantastic Four The End numbers 1 through 6, that is 2006 to 2007. Joey talked about Criminal number 12, X-Men number 5, and Invisible Kingdom number 9. Whereas I talked about Daredevil Volume 1 and 2, Thor number 2, and Hawkeye Freefall number 2. And now, and of course, Captain Marvel, the end, number 1. Bob, you care to read us a listener question?
Yes. Listener Dick Grayson writes, when or at what time of day do you guys read your comics? Also, do you find yourself ever getting behind on reading, but still buying new books?
Oh! I have answers to both of those questions.
Well, go for it. Go for it, then.
Do I have books that I... Let me tell you something. I'm sitting in our nerd room right now, and I'm looking around this room, and it is sad how many things that I can see just right now as we're recording this that I've not read, that have been sitting on the shelf for years. I've had things where I'm like, this should be part of my required comic book reading. I'm going to read this. And there it sits. But to my credit, though, and I did this a little bit last year, I'm definitely doing it this year. It's part of why I went and I read Daredevil this past week, is I don't want to feel so pressured to always bring new comics to the show every single week. I really want to do my best to just read whatever I'm in the mood for this year and just hope that people are entertained by the conversations that we have around those books. But like, there's a bunch of DC stuff on my shelf that I've yet to get to. And part of why I've not gotten into some of them is because I feel like there's so much history there that I don't know. And I'm a little afraid to, there's one in particular, I can't see it from here. Something 7 to Eternity, 7, I don't know, whatever. Anyway, so yes, tons and tons and tons of books. Every single week, there'll be at least two or three things from my pile that get pushed or, go to the wayside. There'll be times when I purchase things and collect them and then don't read them until the entire arc is over. I could have just waited until it was all collected in a trade, but I guess that's just not how I operate. In terms of where I read and when I read every night. Every single night before Bronwyn and I hit the sack, we go and we read in bed. You know, we sit at our respective ends of the bed with the cat, and she reads on her phone, and I typically am reading with my iPad. And about the last 2 hours of every evening, we spend just going through some books and whatnot. She reads a lot more novels, whereas I read the comics. But it's reading is always our winding down time, which is not always the best for Bronwyn, who has to get up so much earlier than I do every day and is up way longer than I am. Once I decide to pass out, I actually pass out, which I never used to be able to do, but now I can. And so we'll be reading and the room will be quiet, and then something in a comic will happen and I'll break the silence with like a whoa or something like that. Scare the cat. She'll be like, oh my God, what is it now? And she gets upset with me because obviously I'm not going to spoil what just transpired in the book because eventually she might read it. So she's like, can't you just read silently? I'm like, I can't. I'm sorry. Every now and again, something gets me. There was a page in Daredevil volume 2 that I fell absolutely in love with. I actually forgot to mention this during my lightning round, but there's one point in the story where after Matt has given up the costume and he's, you know, telling everybody, I'm taking a break. Obviously, he's still listening, right? Because he can hear everything in the city. And there's this one page of him sitting in his living room in his loft and just listening to the city. And you can see outside of his window and the entire, like in the glass, are all the different bubbles and things that people are saying in different like intensities in the font to let you know how far away they are from where he is. And he's sitting there up all night and into the morning, basically calling 911 on repeat and reporting all of the crimes as they happen to try and do something to help the people while he's not playing Daredevil. And it's a really, really intense page. I absolutely loved it. You'll know when you hit it. I think it's like the last page of issue 13 or 14 or something like that. But yeah, so typically at night, if I have to read a graphic novel, I will go into our living room during the day. I'll open up the blinds and let the sun come in. And don't get a lot of time to read physical books these days because we read at night and we don't keep all the lights on. So I can't really appreciate the colors or see the pages and whatnot. So if I know that I need to read a graphic novel, it is typically during the weekend when I could just be awake during the day and reading books and don't have to go to work or anything. So that's for me. What about you, Joey?
I'm all digital now because my comic book shop closed. Classic. I do still get some graphic novels here and there from the bookstore down the street. But I read in bed always, either whether it's on the iPad or with just the nightstand light on. I have a few graphic novels that I'm sitting on, stargazing, things like that. But for the most part, I read a book if I know I'm going to read it, whether it's for the show or it's something that I'm still following along with. I don't really collect as much single issue stuff to continue reading, partly because I don't have the shop anymore. So now if I buy something on Comixology or I get the, you know, I'm looking at a review copy, I do that because I know I want to talk about it. I don't have a lot of kind of extraneous single issue buying. But I read really only in bed. I did download the Comixology app onto my phone now. So sometimes on the train in the morning, I'll read a little bit. But mostly in bed. And then I just pass out because I can sleep anywhere at any time.
How do you sit when you read?
What I do is I lay on my side. And okay. I have the iPad in front of me and I read like that. And then what happens is the iPad will then fall on my face and that's when I know it's time to go to bed.
That's a good plan.
Yeah, I have a terrible habit of I read on my stomach. And so like my neck is craned up when I'm looking at the iPad trying to read and I'm leaning on my elbows, which is so terrible.
Yeah, all of that sounds overall posture. All of that sounds awful. What you should do is
why
lay on your
problems.
Side, pillow under your neck. Pillow between your knees, holding the iPad in front of you like that, and that's it.
Yeah, I have to switch. Like, I typically go to my side after a while, but even then, like, I go to my side, and then I'm leaning with the one hand underneath, you know, my head, and that even gets to be cumbersome.
Your arm will go to
sleep, time.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we need to return our mattress and do a whole thing. I need to, like, take photos of it and submit evidence of droopage or whatever the hell it is they call it, sagging, all of those sound terrible. But I've got terrible posture, but thankfully my hours have been cut back at work in a good way, not in a bad way. So I'm feeling a little bit better on that end, but I'm sure that I could be doing much to help my posture when reading, especially when I sink into, you know, 10 issues in a row of Daredevil. It's probably good to find a better position for my body. How about you, Bob?
You youngsters, I used to be able to do that stuff in bed, lay on my stomach, books in front of me, kneel at outside the bed, put the books on the bed and all that.
Oh,
stuff.
Yeah, I do that too.
Yeah, I can't do that anymore. So I read them everywhere else. The couch next to the lamp I'm using now to read my notes in my swivel rocker. Mm-hmm. Sitting over there, a glass of wine, a lot at the kitchen table, especially Saturday mornings where I'm writing up my notes, I'm reading everything. But here's the thing, I'll pick up my books tomorrow from two different stores. If there's something I need to read instantly, it gets read Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read Wednesday nights a lot too, yeah.
Otherwise, it starts to be Thursday morning. I also bring my books to work.
Mm.
So during lunch hour, it's okay, I can sit, have my lunch, read some comics, go right to the internet if I need to look something up about, hey, that creator also did such and such.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never behind on my weekly books, ever. No matter how many there are, I'm always caught up with those. My problem comes with trade waiting, which becomes trade procrastinating. Where little piles start to add up. Oh, I need to read that. I've been waiting to read that.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, then there are three trades I have to read. I've read the first issue of something. I have, for instance, three trades of By Night sitting in front of me.
Oh, yeah.
I read the first three and loved it. And we talked to John Allison, and I want to read the rest of it. And they're sitting on my coffee table. I'll get to those. But I also picked up last week, if you remember, Jessica Jones' Purple Daughter, which I read for the show, which I love to reread. And Blind Spot should be in this week. And Giant Days Volume 12.
There you go.
And it's like, oh, here we go with this again. And we're only about, I think, 3 weeks away from the Wonder Woman Golden Age anthology omnibus.
Oh, boy.
Which finishes off Dr. Morrison's run. So I actually have them all to read in a book form that'll give me a hernia picking it up. But still, will I get to that by Christmas? Maybe. Maybe. I got to get these weekly books read first. And the catching up is a problem. I wish I had more time to do that. I just need to make more time to do it. How do you guys find your mindset forming? Is it, I need to catch up and you just do it? Or do you, it happens organically?
I mean, I think it's I have my own priorities, I guess, week to week. You know, Wednesday morning comes, the very first thing I do every Wednesday morning, like even if I wake up just for a time and then go back to bed, whenever I wake up, if the books are up on Comixology, I'm already shopping, I'm already grabbing my things. And typically, if there's something that I was really looking forward to or a new number one, I will get to those first. And then I will prioritize like continuing series and stuff like that. I kind of wait to see what we talk about throughout the week to find out if anything that, you know, Bob has read or Joey's read or Sarah or anybody that's going to be on the show. I kind of, you know, base what I'm going to read off of that. But typically Wednesday is like my power reading night where, you know, getting the new books really energizes me. And I'm like, oh, I want to read all the things because this came out and I've been waiting for this. And so I'll go hardcore. But my problem is that because of my crappy memory, I will already start to forget what I've read that Wednesday. And we're coming around to Monday, Tuesday. I need to start getting my house in order. And so I typically spend like anywhere from Sunday to Monday reading whatever it is that I intended to read and then rereading the issues that I know that I'm going to be talking about on the show. Like I read Thor number two twice. I read Hawkeye Freefall number two twice. Daredevil only once because it was two trades. But my problem comes from not being very patient if I know that things are available. Like tonight, I would love to read the third volume of Daredevil. It's available in single issue form at $3.99 a pop.
Ouch.
But the trade is already slated for April and it's $8.99. Ooh. So it's a fraction of the price.
Yeah.
I know, but it's only the beginning of February and it's in April. But I feel like by the time April comes around and it actually gets released, I'll have bought so many other books that week that I don't know if I'll be able to justify the $9.
Okay.
And then I'll be like, well, then I have to reread Daredevil again because I've been away from it for 2 months. So I don't know. It's just a personal thing for me. I know not everybody experiences that, but I just, like I said, I forget a lot of things. Unless a story really, really blows me away. I have a tendency, because we read so much and there's such an influx of characters and stories and information, I feel like every time I read something, another thing gets pushed out. And to be honest with you, there are times when I don't mind it, because when it comes time to do a reread, there are elements of it that feel like it's brand new again, and I'm sure. Like, yeah! So, you know, it has its positives and negatives, whatever. There's very little I can do about it. I am who I am. So, yeah. Right. Do we have anything else that we want to add to this question?
I don't think so, Joey.
Nope.
All right, that was fun. We've answered that a couple times, but it you know, answers change each time. So don't be shy. Let us know what you want us to talk about on the show when we get a chance to do some listener questions. We'd love to hear from you. All right, let's talk about the books that we're looking forward to this week. Bob, what are you picking up?
Well, as I said, the Giant Days Volume 12, talking about rereading. I will happily dive back into that. Lois Lane Number 8. X-Men Fantastic Four Number 1 is this week.
Yep.
Want to see what that's going to be about. We know there's some shenanigans happening there where the X-Men are looking very heavily at Franklin Richards for a contribution.
I smell an open discussion book for next
week. I do too. Cap the End, I might take a look. I'm not a big Eric Larson fan, but I'm willing to take a shot. And I don't think I'm going to pick it up only because I have all the oversized individual issues, but the Harleen hardcover comes out this week from Stepan Sejic with a special acetate cover that's only going to be available on the first printing.
Oh, man, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
He also mentioned on his Twitter, he just is working up a pitch to do a Poison Ivy book for DC in the same format.
Yes. Oh, man. Yes. I would read that in a heartbeat. Joey, what are you picking up?
X-Men Fantastic Four, Batman Number 88, Buffy Number 12. Michael Avon Oeming's got a new quarterly coming out over at Image called The After Realm, something about Ragnarok, Thor, Norse God stuff. I don't care. Michael Avon Oeming's great, so I might check that out. Crowded Number 11. Fourth issue of Napoleon Dynamite series is coming out as well. Also the fourth and final issue of Going to the Chapel, which we talked about on the show when it was, you know, Pepos was on. But just for anybody following along, the last issue is coming out from there and definitely worth picking up. We really like that series too. And I've decided that this is the week, because the last issue is coming out, I'm going to read Steve Orlando's Martian Manhunter.
Top to bottom,
I'm doing the whole thing. I just bought the issues before we started recording tonight. I'm going for it, the whole thing.
Oh man, that's something I definitely want to read. Well, I was looking at that. I saw the 12 of 12, and I was like, oh, do I do it? Talk amongst yourselves for 2 seconds. There's something on my shelf that I need to know what it's called.
I read the first couple of those Martian Manhunters. They were very, very good.
Steve Orlando's?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I read the first issue, and Riley Rossmo's on art, first of all, and it's like, come on. Yes. But I've always really liked the Martian Manhunter character, and Orlando was just so fond of this series when he was pitching it that like, I want to now that it's finishing, I want to read the whole thing just straight through.
I found it.
What'd you find?
No. The thing that I was looking for when I was talking about my shelves. And the reason I couldn't find it was because it was on the floor. I think this week, if I get the chance, they're in trade, so I don't know how much light I'll have. But DC's Seven Soldiers of Victory, Grant Morrison, and a just murderer's row of DC artists.
How many issues is that?
I don't know. It's two very sizely trade paperback
and
volumes.
And it's Grant Morrison. It's gonna take you 4 weeks to get through that.
Yeah, you'll be ready for next year's award show.
Exactly. Get out of here. I'm gonna read this week.
I remember Bobby talking about this and saying how much he loved it on one of the older episodes of TC, and I bought it shortly thereafter. And I actually made an attempt to read this around that time, and I picked it up, and I was just like, I don't know who anybody is. I don't know when this is happening. I'm so confused. And I put it down and I never went back to it. But I think it's been a couple of years. I might be able to hang this time around.
Did anybody keep reading the Grant Morrison Green Lantern stuff?
No.
That was so dense. You thought Far Sector was dense, like the Grant Morrison Lantern
Far
stuff.
Far Sector's wild.
It was crazy. But anyway, good luck with that.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know.
You'll be done just in time for 5G to start.
Hey! Yeah.
Now, with Birds of Prey and Lock and Key coming out this weekend, I probably won't be able to get to this. But I don't have a lot of books this week. I'm picking up Batman 88, Lois Lane number 8, Crowded 11, Marauders number 7, X-Men Fantastic Four number 1. That's it. Like, that's all I saw. So, I got plenty of time to go into the archives and see what I can't fish out, and lots of stuff that I've never read. Maybe I'll pick up one of those books and I've never read something that isn't Seven Soldiers of Victory.
There you go. Look, they were actually a team back in the 40s. They were sort of the third string Justice Society.
Mm-hmm.
With Shining Knight and Vigilante, all that sort of stuff. And I think in Grant Morrison, he added a few more recent characters. Zatanna's part of it. And there were two minis and then individual issues for each of them, I think. So you've got a lot of reading there, boss.
So, like I said, we're going to try to get together on Sunday to record with Sarah and Bronwyn. We'll be talking about Birds of Prey, amongst other things. Probably a little bit of Lock and Key if we can manage to get to that. And, yeah, more books, more shows, more stuff. Does anybody have any closing statements before we get out of here?
Nope.
All right. We've reached the end of this week's edition of the Talking Comics podcast. As always, you can send us your comments or questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. We are also on Twitter @TalkingComics. Don't forget to check out TalkingComicBooks.com for reviews from our fantastic contributors. And please go and check out Talking Valiant, D&D Adventure, and of course, the Ladies of Valhalla podcasts. Bob, where can our listeners find you?
Old-fashioned email, BobRyer@TalkingComicBooks.com.
Joey?
@JoeyBuccino.
Sarah is @GeekCountryLady on all the socials. Jessica is @Jarsica for all the things. And Bronwyn is @ShinyBabyB on Twitter and Instagram. I am @Dead_Anchoress on Twitter and Instagram. So for Bob.
Time to get rabid.
For Joey.
Bye.
And for me, thank you for listening. Be excellent to each other. And until next time on the Talking Comics podcast, to be continued. My thing about the Nipplegate thing is, having seen the clip and what happened, I still don't understand what Timberlake was hoping to accomplish with that gesture in general. What was he doing?
It was all a work, man.
Yeah.
But what was he like? Was he pulling at it?
It was a work.
Reason?
It was a work.
What do you mean?
You gotta get on your wrestling kayfabe over here, man. It was storyline. It was all set up.
Oh, yeah, the Nipplegate thing. You think so? Oh,
yeah, because it played right into the lyrics of the song, as I recall. I don't remember the exact lyrics, but he hit it in a place where and there you go. Everyone's still talking about it 20 years later.
Oh man, Super Bowl needs ratings, I guess. Back then.
97% of the people in Kansas City were watching the fourth quarter. So I don't know about it's 100 million people watch. So it's pretty impressive. But I was very impressed by this halftime show.